Good morning, Wisconsin. So let's pour that coffee and talk to some experts about what's going on in Milwaukee, Madison, Washington, and beyond. Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's the Political Power Hour on WTMJ. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Should we talk about the government?
Yes, that's my cue to start talking, and here I go. It's a Tuesday from the beautiful and chilly Annex Wealth Management Studios here on the Avenue, Wisconsin Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Let's get right to it. Yesterday, I was talking about things other than national politics, and many, many texters said, get to the tariffs, get to Elon Musk. And I thought to myself, even though I knew he was coming out already, Christian Slater is the person, the writer, the creative talent, bourbon expert, I believe, is another one of those things, these characteristics that people refer to him as. Christian Slater joins us on the WTMJ hotline. Hi, Christian Slater.
Hey, good to talk to you. Thanks for not trading me to the Lakers.
That was a nutty trade, wasn't it? I wasn't expecting that trade, but you know, basketball is stupid. Last night we had a Bucks game where none of the starters played at all, which if you're a sports fan would be, and if you're paying money for, which is big money for a ticket, you'd be really irritated about. But let's get to politics. All right, we'll start with tariffs, Christian Slater. It's an interesting situation. President Trump sets up the scenario that he's not happy with the current alignments with Canada and Mexico and the EU. So he creates this, obviously, this tariff idea, which you know is 25% for Canada and Mexico, and then the EU still to be considered, but China 10%. They've sort of responded. But now we're on this pause. I'm not an economist, but I typically, and most people I think would agree with this statement, when you slap a tariff on somebody, they're probably going to just do the same thing to you. What am I missing in this, in the big equation of tariffs and our international relationships when it comes to trade?
Yeah, Donald Trump is interesting in that you can't really believe anything he says until he threatens to do something completely insane, and then you have to believe him 100% because this trade war that he's starting with our allies is completely nuts. Because your listeners are smart, they already know that when you apply a tariff to something, the business or the country of origin doesn't pay the tariff. It's the American consumer because it gets passed on to us. So he's asking American consumers to essentially fund whatever he's trying to do to these other countries in order, you know, basically just to get a good public relations hit. So he's threatening to implement these tariffs because he wants, you know, Mexico to stop the flow of fentanyl into the U.S. Okay, well, they're sending more troops to the border, but they'd been doing that for months. Contacts at the border, immigration from the border has been down for almost a year. He's asking the same thing of Canada. They've had like a $1.3 billion plan also in place for months to stop the flow of fentanyl. And, you know, just a tiny, tiny percentage of the fentanyl comes in from Canada. So this is just completely nonsense. So he's asking basically American consumers to pay for him to be able to look like he's tough on immigration and on fentanyl, when in fact he's actually not really accomplishing much at all. And the other thing too is, you know, you can say, well, he's not actually doing these tariffs, but threatening tariffs has its effects on the stock market. It's, you know, markets don't like uncertainty. And when you start playing around with this stuff, then, you know, he's playing with our 401k accounts. Ultimately, because you saw the market drop yesterday, I believe, and he's throwing chaos into a system, and you know, threatening our biggest trade partners, and it just doesn't make any sense.
It's an interesting strategy because he's obviously, you know, I'm somebody who thinks maybe trade and economic matters should be handled separately. He's kind of lumping it all together to try to make a bigger point about, you know, the fentanyl that you talked about, and certainly people coming into our country illegally, which are, you can think two different things at the same time. That's a concern. Fentanyl, obviously, when you look at the story of the United States over the last 10 years or so, that's a big story. But lumping it all together is something that this president has been very successful at. He likes to do this, and I think he does it, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, to diffuse. When it doesn't go his way, he goes, well, it was a noble effort. I wanted to get, but you know, if it doesn't work for him, then he can kind of fall back on that. I was just trying to do the people's work, and I was trying to go after these bigger problems. This one, though, is significant, and you hit on it exactly. What did I hear about pre-election? The cost of gas, groceries, everything that we're talking about. And it's not insignificant when you're talking about a 25% tariff for Mexico and Canada. For everything from construction materials to alcohol, and I'm sure the folks in Wisconsin aren't happy to hear that. That's a big deal for people.
Yeah. Literally the thing that got him elected was inflation. The fact that things cost twice as much as they used to. And he vowed to bring the costs down when, in fact, all of his tariffs would increase the cost of everything. He would make everything worse. And, give him credit. He promised all of this during the election, and I guess people just ignored it, but this is what actually would happen. And you're right, it makes no sense to couple illegal immigration with starting a trade war. The two have nothing to do with one another. Mexico is trying to stop the flow of fentanyl over the border, and they have been for years. But the cartels bringing fentanyl over the border and what we pay for a car that comes from Mexico to the United States have nothing to do with one another. And it's just basically just, all posturing on his part.
Christian Snyder, great columnist. You can see his work at National Review Online and a lot of other publications. And he is certainly in step with what is happening in the world of politics and has been for a long time. We're going to take a break. After the break, Christian's going to explain the allure and popularity and appeal, at least to Donald Trump, of the one, the only Elon Musk. Big ask. We'll see if Christian can deliver on that after this on 620 WTMJ. Got a week or so before Valentine's Day, but we're going to wind it up a little bit. Christian Snyder, great writer, conservative writer, and sort of a guy that knows a lot about what's happening in the world of politics. He's covered it for so long. Let's talk about Elon Musk, Christian. I'm not a fan. I've sort of abandoned Twitter. I still have my account there, but I don't really post much of anything anymore. I don't understand the allure of this person. He is now running this agency or whatever, unofficial agency, D-O-G-E. Doge or whatever he calls it, to sort of root out inefficiencies in government. And just my take is he seems to have almost unlimited access to areas and sensitive data that nobody other than a very few people that are actually governmental, vetted, experienced employees of our federal government should have. But yet Trump seems to be letting this guy, a friend who, oh, by the way, donated $200+ million to his campaign for president, just do whatever he wants. I'm concerned about that. What do you think?
Well, yeah, you should be concerned because very little of it is actually legal. Can you imagine the uproar on the right if, Joe Biden let George Soros or somebody on the left just run rampant throughout government, start, spending money or cutting money or all that stuff. So Elon Musk basically, he buys Twitter and turns it into X, and he basically makes himself the main character on X. Like, I have non-political accounts on there, and suddenly I'm being fed all this Elon Musk information. So Donald Trump, we know, spends a lot of time on social media, so he looks at this guy and he's like, this guy must be really smart. They team up. Musk gives him a lot of money, and in exchange, Trump lets him into the Department of Treasury, where Musk is now evidently connecting up his servers to Department of Treasury data. And it's just puzzling why what Elon Musk would do with all this data on American taxpayers that he would have access to. So, you know, he's cutting full departments, U.S. aid, which gives aid to other countries. And there's an argument to be made that maybe we need to reduce the amount of aid that we give to other countries. But that should be done through Congress and through making laws, not just by handing power over to the richest man in the world and saying, have at it. So, yeah, it's a really weird spot that we're in right now. And, you know, if the shoe were on the other foot, conservatives would be throwing a fit.
My concern, one, I don't, he wasn't appointed, he wasn't vetted, all those things that typically happen with governmental employees. And I understand he's unpaid, so I mean, I suppose if you're the richest guy in the world, that doesn't matter to him. But when someone has access to the assets and resources of our country, which are significant, trillions of dollars, to have that sort of unsupervised access to that information is kind of concerning to me. So I guess my simple question is, maybe not so simple, how dangerous is this current situation when you have someone like Elon Musk? And you can say whatever you want about Elon Musk. Some people love him, some people hate him, whatever. And certainly he knows something because he was able to assemble a massive amount of wealth. But I am just worried about the assets of our country when someone has that kind of access.
Yeah, not to mention the fact that Elon Musk has some huge government contracts with the federal government. So he's been tasked to go in and cut all this money from the government, but I'm guessing he's probably not going to start cutting the money that he gets from the government. So it's a huge conflict of interest. We're still going to find out at some point whether any of this is legal. It seems like it's not. I mean, we have separation of powers. We have the rule of law. A lot of these programs have been put in place through statute, through the laws, and just allowing some rich guy to go in and start throwing away all this stuff. I think you're going to see a lot of court action on this.
I know you wrote a piece, I think it was for National Review, correct me if I'm wrong, about RFK Jr. Facing a critical vote about whether or not he's going to be running one of the most important agencies when it comes to public safety and health. Where do you think that's going to go?
I mean, you've already had seen some people. I think Ted Cruz said he's voting for RFK Jr. I mean, this guy was on the outer edge of the loony left for decades, and now all of a sudden, because he supports Donald Trump, all these Republicans are falling in line to support him. It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you've seen speeches Donald Trump gave about RFK Jr., you know, calling him a lunatic, a lefty, and all that kind of stuff. But as soon as he turns around and supports Donald Trump, then suddenly everybody is on board with this crackpot who, you know, doesn't believe in vaccines. He said he has a brain worm working his way through his head. Mm. He's just beyond the pale. And, you know, a lot of these people Donald Trump appointed aren't because he actually believes what these people believe. It's just as a test to senators to see how much he can bend them to his will. And it seems like if I had to bet right now, I think RFK Jr. is going to get approved because so few senators are actually willing to stand up to Trump.
Interesting. Christian Song, we're going to take another break. I want to talk about something fun because you're like one of the leading experts on the show Saturday Night Live, and it's hitting its 50th season in its 50th season. Lots to talk about there, including these specialists, the big special that's coming up. So Christian Snyder will have some fun talking about SNL after this on 620 WTMJ. Author, columnist, Christian Snyder joining us. A couple of minutes left with him. I want to talk about something he's very passionate about. He's one of the leading experts on the show. Saturday Night Live coming into their 50th year now, and the big special coming up of the music special. Christian and I both enjoyed immensely. He's also the creator of, along with Scott Bertram, of the Wasn't That Special podcast, all about SNL. And got to give him credit. He does his homework. They've watched, what year are you in now of the 50 years? You've watched every episode in detail, chronicling this absolutely amazing show that's lasted this long.
Yeah, we just finished watching season 41, so we're
getting close.
Stretch.
So yeah. As we approach 50, and we both watched that music special they did. I thought it was fantastic, and I know Questlove was involved with that. And I learned things about the show that I think I've watched most of the episodes. Guests that I never remembered or stories behind the scenes that were amazing. One of the appeals of the show and why I think people love this show is it does so many things. It has the music. It has the really sharp, timely comedy. It has the political comedy. I'm sure Elon Musk is going to be, barbecued at some point this season. It kind of covers all the bases for me when I'm looking for something to watch on a Saturday night.
Yeah, and in terms of politically, I mean, Elon Musk has hosted the show.
Yeah.
Just hosted a few years ago. Donald Trump in season 41 hosts an episode while he's running for president. So, yeah, it's interesting. And people seem to think, SNL, it's just a snake pit of lefties. But one of the things that I've noticed is they'll actually, they'll make fun of the left occasionally. And there are certainly more conservative types of moments than you would remember. So that's kind of one of the revelations of having watched 41 seasons of it now.
When we talk about some of the incredible stories of SNL and the people that have been on the show, I don't know that is it an equatable show. Maybe the Ed Sullivan Show that had that level, that caliber of talent.
Boy, I don't know. Nothing
that goes
has lasted
back before your time.
yeah, right. I mean, it was the show was created kind of as an antidote to like the Carol Burnett Show, where people would go on and just laugh all the time and break. And there was actually a story in the New York Times last week featuring our podcast, incidentally, about how the show frowns on breaking in sketches where cast members just start laughing in the middle of a sketch.
Hey, we got to leave it there, Christian, because ABC News is coming.
Yeah.
Up. Sorry to cut you off. Always appreciate you joining me.
Of course. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, man. All right, got local news. Before we get to any of that, now the latest from ABC. All right, let's talk some local politics, local news with the one, the only, Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Hi, Jeremy.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Always fun to talk to you about some of the local things. Now, this story has been around for a while. We've seen the headlines. Housing Authority misplaced money. I guess there's a little information on this story about the millions that were either lost or now found, I guess is the way you'd put it.
Yeah, we saw Willie Hines in December depart. He retired after saying he wasn't going to do that. He was the head of the Housing Authority. His number two also retired, and the chief finance director, the top financial employee, retired. New person comes in, Brad Leak, now the CFO. And within just a month or two, he finds, hey, this $2.5, $2.8 million that federal regulators have been like, hey, where is this? He found it right away that, as he said, it was illegally moved from a voucher program into general operational money.
So this suggests to me, this is one of the reasons people don't necessarily trust government completely, is that seems like a conscious decision that someone decided, right, we're going to shift it from this voucher expense line to covering our and our operations costs.
Absolutely. It definitely was, because it happened in multiple transactions between 2019 and 2022. And it just seems, at minimum, like a terrible idea.
So what happens next on this story? Just saying that where the money went is one thing, but like repercussions, penalties, what happens next to that piece of the story?
Brad Leak, the new CFO, said he expects a compliance action to come down from HUD. He doesn't expect criminal charges to come because the money just went to benefit the Housing Authority. It wasn't, people weren't pocketing the money. They were just misusing it internally. But there are very real consequences already. When he identified the money, that immediately caused a $2.8 million hole in the budget. And to make payroll, they laid off 20 people. They froze hiring. They're paying bills 45 days late now. They cut what the interim director says are nice-to-have expenses. They're restructuring a $1.6 million overdue pension payment. They identified $600,000 more in uncovered development costs, and they have a $1.1 million payment that they owe to the general city budget that they need to figure out what to do about.
I don't want to do this story without talking about the impact on the people that use the resources of the Housing Authority. What's the impact on those folks?
As of last Friday, the claim from Brad Leak and from the acting secretary executive director, is that no front of line services have been cut, so that there should be no negative experience to Housing Authority residents. Now, that's something the new board is going to be watching very closely, because if you're short money, it's going to be tough to not cut things that not benefit, but support the residents you have, the almost 10,000 people that live in your housing.
Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com, joining us on the Political Power Hour on 620 WTMJ. Let's stay on Milwaukee this time. MPS, finalists for superintendent of this biggest district in the states. What's the news there?
We have three finalists that the MPS school board has advanced. We have Joshua Starr, a former superintendent of the Montgomery County Public Schools in Maryland. He is currently the managing partners of a nonprofit known as the Center for Model Schools and author of something called Equity-Based Leadership. We have, and I apologize, these names are a bit complicated to say, Brenda Casalias, I believe is how you pronounce it. She has more high-level experience than everyone else. She was the superintendent of Boston Public Schools from 2019 to 2022. And you might think immediately, oh, that sounds really good. But actually, her last year was bought out by the Boston School Board. Mm. She also had a position with the state of Minnesota, very similar to what we have as the state superintendent of education here, but it's a cabinet position there, so that's not an elected position. And then the final person is Andre Townsell. And interestingly, the biggest school district he's ever led is 15,000 students in Calvert County, Maryland.
So about a quarter the size of MPS, give or take a few thousand.
Yes.
I guess the question, and I know this came up in your Urban Milwaukee piece that you guys put out, what are they looking for? A lot of us look at MPS from the sort of, we certainly talk, I could say ad nauseum about the SRO situation. The law says this, the school district says this, and we're trying to figure that out. What are they looking, what's the board looking for in a superintendent to lead the largest school district in the state?
Well, Henry Leonard, who's an outgoing school board member, said he's looking for, quote, someone that can make tough decisions to make sure we don't fall back into bad patterns. I think that's a really good way to look at what you want out of the superintendent.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, obviously all eyes are on MPS, and the SRO thing doesn't help, and the academic standards thing doesn't help. I have been for a long time an advocate of splitting up the district into like four entities, which sort of let, not to compete against each other, but just have the leader in each of these districts kind of show the other one, give them a helping hand if necessary. This is how you can do it. This is how you can succeed. I say this if with a lot of sincerity, if it's fair to all of the districts and you don't just take the worst performing areas and make those folks suffer. I think there's an opportunity there, but that's obviously not something that's part of the superintendent search, or is it?
It's not explicitly part of that, but I mean, that's definitely how you structure the operations of the district. It is a huge district. There's more than 140 schools. So really getting hands-on is going to be really tough for a superintendent if they don't define a clear leadership structure.
All right, let's move on to something I rarely talk about, but it caught my eye because you always send me a list of things that you guys are covering at UrbanMilwaukee.com. We're talking to Jeremy Janine, who's one of the founders of UrbanMilwaukee.com. Scooters. How in the world, this is a serious question, how in the world are scooters and scooter companies making money in the wintertime? Is it the mild winter that's doing it? What is it? What's going on here?
Well, I think what we're seeing is a lot of people use scooters as last mile transportation. So they get off the bus and they need to go another half mile. They're leaving the grocery store and they need to get home. They use the scooters that last gap, and that need doesn't go away in the winter. It certainly becomes impossible to do when the roads are covered in ice and snow. But as you noted, it's been a mild winter, and so we've had more than 13,000 trips already in January.
So when they say raking in cash, do you know what they're talking about, like what kind of money they're talking about?
Sure, and raking in cash is my words, not that city official's words. But
got it.
It was something in the benchmark of $559,000 in fees that the city of Milwaukee made from 971,980 scooter trips. And the way the city makes money off scooters is $100 for each scooter that's put out on city streets and then 25 cents per ride.
It's not a bad deal for the city. I mean, they're not maintaining these things. They have to obviously deal with the logistics of making sure the streets are plowed and the sidewalks are cleared when they do decide to ride on the sidewalks, which does happen, by the way. I see it here downtown. How many scooter companies are currently operating in Milwaukee?
So in 2024, the city for the first time said enough of this temporary pilot program stuff. We're going to do a permanent framework, We're going to have two vendors. We have Lime and Spin that are operating in Milwaukee. The interesting thing, and I think this will be something to really watch going forward, is Lime is doing something like 80 or 90% of all the trips. Spin is just a really small player in Milwaukee, and there's different theories on why that might be, but Lime simply has more scooters out on city streets and people are riding them. They also have an integration with Uber, I believe, which is one of the reasons people think they're getting used more.
Well, if to use your terms, if they're raking in cash, let's hope the weather stays mild because the city obviously benefits. And what was that number, $500,000 that they're raking in?
Yep, and all that money goes, one, to compliance. You talked about people riding on the sidewalks and stuff, monitoring that, as well as building out bicycle, pedestrian, cyclist, and scooter infrastructure. So those scooter parking spots you see and other protected bike lanes, that kind of thing. That's where the money goes.
All right, before we let you get out of here, what else are you working on for local political and otherwise news?
Well, there's one big thing coming down the pike today is a new facility for Immigration and Customs Enforcement on the northwest side of Milwaukee. The question is, if the federal government says we want to put it there, can the city actually say no or put any conditions? The answer, based on the city attorney's opinion, is no. The federal government, similar to state government, supersedes the city's authority.
And it's I think it's our understanding. I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but this is part of this immigration roundup, in this case, undocumented individuals in this country. That's part of that story, right?
I actually would say no, it's not.
Tell me what the difference is.
Sure. So there's a facility downtown Milwaukee right now that's being integrated into the MSOE, Milwaukee School of Engineering campus. Since 2023, so way before Trump, the federal government has been looking to relocate the ICE facility to this northwest side location.
All right. Important clarification. Always enjoy the conversations. Jeremy Janine, UrbanMilwaukee.com. Always appreciate the updates.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Political Power Hour, 620 WTMJ. Thanks to my guests on the program today. I got a couple short segments, but I want to hit on something. I had Jeremy Janine on talking about local politics, local news, and, of course, the great multi-talented Christian Slater talking about a lot of different things. I'm going to talk about those things in a little bit more detail right now. We started the show talking about tariffs. So I appreciate all the comments about that. And I'm paraphrasing, but a lot of the people who disagree with Christian's take and probably my take, give it time. Let's let the president explore. I'm all about giving the president time. And I've been pretty fair about this. I said one of the reasons the crackdown on the border is happening because both sides have messed the bed on this issue for many years. So I'm giving the president full leeway to fix that problem. Certainly fentanyl is part of that. My complaint is that when you lump everything together, fentanyl, human trafficking, crime in America, to tariffs, it sort of dumbs down the process. Why do I say that? One, tariffs just by themselves are very controversial. And I'm concerned as a consumer who buys things, and you probably all fall into that category as well, things are going to cost more. I had one of our partners here at WTMJ on Saturday. I did the Saturday Morning Fix-It show and the Rosegrave Foxwood Travel show. And Abby from Abby Home said costs are going to go up. They're already getting letters from their vendors saying costs will go up. That's concerning to me because as much as people want to say it didn't happen, one of the things we are promised with the Trump presidency is gas and groceries, the cost of things will go down. That remains to be seen. Tariffs muddy that picture, and I think make it more difficult for that reality, which I think a lot of Americans, to be honest, are looking for from this president or any president, make things cost less, help our bottom lines. And as we see the state of Wisconsin mess the bed, to use that term again, when it comes to the budget surplus, which everybody who paid in deserves some of that money put back into their accounts. And I don't care if it's the Democratic governor of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, or the legislature led by Robin Voss and Deva Lemonhue. Don't care. That is our money. Stop sitting on it and give it back to the taxpayers. That's tariffs. After the break, some final thoughts on Elon Musk, the richest man in the world, who has way too much access to sensitive data. And I will be the first one to crucify the president and Elon Musk if he gets access to the assets of this country and somehow screws that up. That commentary coming up after this on 620 WTMJ.
WTMJ, W277CV, and WKTI HD2 Milwaukee from the Annex Wealth Management Studios. This is News Radio WTMJ, a Good Karma brand station.
A couple minutes left. Let's tee up Elon Musk. If you listen to the show, you know I'm not a fan of Elon Musk. You can be a billionaire, maybe our first trillionaire at some point in the not-too-distant future, but and still be a complete idiot. Now, why do I say that? Well, he bought a company, Twitter, changed it to X, and it's worth half of what he paid for it, apparently, and most people are jumping ship, less users, all of that stuff. But set that aside, he donated almost $300 million to the Trump campaign, which our crazy rules allow, which I don't like, but that's the reality. And if you have that kind of money and you want to spend it that way, knock yourself out. But I chose that word carefully. The question that I have for the Elon Musk adorers out there is, actually for just the adoration of billionaires in general, we seem to make this connection between wealth and intelligence. There may be some synergy, but it's not absolute. And when I see someone who's sort of running amok in our government with apparently access to sensitive data, our data, social security numbers and the like, and who I don't trust with a dollar of our money, doesn't mean I won't welcome his suggestions on how to trim government, because I'm a small government guy, always have been. I remember going to see Ron Johnson when he was hyper-focused on this issue, and I enjoyed those presentations because it means something. This is a whole nother level of scrutiny, which I don't think he's qualified or certainly vetted enough to provide to this president. Now, President Trump can make his own decisions. He's not going to listen to me. Get that. But this is dangerous stuff. And I don't want him to have unfettered access to our information or certainly the assets, which are tremendous, of the richest country on the planet. That concerns me. It should concern you. Lots more show the rest of the week. Public safety tomorrow. The news is next on 620 WTMJ.